Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Locked On Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg here, as always, with David Ramil. The Heat losing again. This time to the Hawks, losing 93-90. This is their sixth straight loss. Another close one, another nail-biter, kind of coming down to the end. In a game without Goran Dragic and without Justice Winslow. So there's some positives there for the effort?
Yeah, I mean, second night of a back-to-back, obviously. You know, after a tough loss yet again on the previous night against the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio. So they had to travel back, had a late flight. Wasn't an easy game for them, obviously, but you know, Atlanta has gone off to a surprising start. They're now 8-2, but they were 7-2 prior to the Miami game, and so they were off to, as expected, a strong start. And it showed against Miami. Miami, you know, followed the same pattern that they have in previous games, where they allowed the opponent to get a big lead early on in the first half, and then they had to kind of find a way to claw their way back into it. And they did so with some defensive tenacity and some key shots and key moments, but unfortunately they came up short yet again.
Yeah, I think the key moment there kind of came in the fourth quarter. The Heat went on a 6-0 run to bring it within 3 points, and that was with about 6.5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was really just back and forth after that for the rest of the game. And, you know, it was a situation where maybe it was too little too late. Atlanta had a big second quarter where they outscored Miami 27-18. They had a nice little run there at the beginning of the fourth quarter as well. A 17-5 run by the Hawks, which really just blew the end of the third and the beginning of the fourth quarter, which blew the game open for them. And Miami had, like I said, that nice little run there, but it wasn't enough. And, you know, it was nice that they fought back. You know, this team just, it doesn't quit, right? That's the good thing. This team wants to win. This team, Spoelstra's got them working hard. And, you know, that might sound like we're grasping for straws or for positive things, but that's not, a lot of teams can't say that when they're losing, especially after they've lost 4, 5, 6 straight games. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's where the team's culture tend to have more of an impact. This isn't a team like Philadelphia or Sacramento or even a further to the north in Orlando, where you have teams that are just so used to losing that when those losses start to pile on, as they invariably do, you start to get, you know, comfortable with those losing habits. And then that's part of the problem. You know, even guys like, sure, there are guys like, you know, Derek Williams, who has never really had much success at the NBA level as far as, you know, overall team success. But even a guy like James Johnson, who just came this year, Deion Waiters, these are guys who tasted the playoffs last season, so they're familiar with winning culture, winning ways, and I think that's partly obviously what defines Miami as well. So there's some pauses, at least early on in the season. Maybe it's because they had higher expectations to start the year. They just haven't met them quite yet. And of course, with, you know, Goran Dragic missing his third straight game, and along with Justice Winslow as well, you can always look to that and say, well, you know, we were kind of behind the eight ball, and so this is obviously just a moral victory, but it's a victory nonetheless for them, you know, at least emotionally. So, yeah, I mean,
I know we didn't have, you know, Goran Dragic. We didn't have Justice Winslow, who is a late scratch, you know, with that wrist injury.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Hawks also lost Dwight Howard midway through the third quarter. I thought that they still went on that run, you know, so it's not like they missed him so much. But when Hassan Whiteside really got going, and we want to talk about Whiteside later on as part of our spotlight, but when he really got going, it was when Dwight Howard was out, you know? And I do hesitate a little bit to credit the Heat that much, because I thought Dwight Howard was really controlling a lot of what Whiteside wanted to do, just as far as getting into the positions he wanted to be in. You know, all of a sudden now Whiteside was a foot or two closer to the rim, and those shots became easier for him. He got a big chunk of his rebounds in the second half. He finished the game with 25 rebounds, which was a NBA season high. I mean, no player in the NBA this season has had more rebounds than that. So, you know, I thought Howard's injury in the third quarter had something to do with Miami's run there. Not everything, of course, and obviously Miami was short on players as well, so injuries did factor into this game. But I thought that the Heat did a good job, unlike that Spurs game. You know, I thought they did a better job trying to control the pace in this game, especially earlier in the game. The pace tends to quicken up in NBA games as the game goes along. But I thought they did overall a better job trying to control the pace and keep Atlanta from... They're one of the top pacing teams in the league. They scored a ton of points. They averaged more than 100 points a game, and they were able to hold them to 93. So the defense isn't the problem. The defense is there. It's just that Miami hasn't scored more than 91 points but once in the last six games.
Yeah, your good observation about the defense, too. They obviously keyed in on a number of Atlanta's, you know, top scores. They limited Kent Bazemore to just 25% shooting. He was 4 of 12, finishing with 12 points. Kyle Korver was not nearly as deadly as he could have been. They limited to just 2 3-point attempts, and he missed both of those, and he was just 2 of 4 overall. The main scoring output actually came from, you know, Dennis Schroeder, who had 18 points and 7 of 15 shooting. He was 2 of 2 from behind the line as well. Even Howard, before he went out with injury, he had 11 points on 5 of 9 shooting. Paul Millsap, you know, another strong scorer, only 7 of 17. This is a guy who's been traditionally a Heat killer throughout his career, and he would only manage 15 points there. So there was some positives as far as the defensive tenacity and their ability to restrict what they did.
And just to jump on to what they did from the three-point line, this is a team that averages 29 or 30 three-pointers a game, attempts, you know, a game. Right. And they held them to base almost a little bit more than half that. They held them to just 17 attempted threes. So they did a good job running them off the three-point line and trying to funnel things into Hassan Whiteside, which I thought they did a good enough job of. I mean, Atlanta scored 50 points in the paint compared to Miami's 46. So 50, you might not want to be giving up 50 points in the paint per game, but if your strategy is to not give up three-pointers and to try to bring that game down into the mud a little bit, then that is certainly what worked, right? And you can give up 50 points in the paint if you're only giving up 6 3-pointers in the game. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a good strategy, and you had to tip your hat to Spoelstra, who obviously had something keyed in. Him and his staff were able to come up with something pretty quickly on the fly. If they had this from before the Spurs game, that's one thing. But either way, they had a clear game plan. I think it worked out for the most part. The Howard injury did help Miami, but you know, you have to take advantage of those kinds of injuries at any point in time. Atlanta certainly took advantage of Goran Dragic's absence as well as Justice Winslow. So they were still able to bounce back, and maybe a shot here or there that they might've been able to connect, and Miami might've been able to pull out the victory. So, overall, again, like I said, a moral victory. You don't want to start building towards those this early in the season, but I guess if you're looking for positives until such time as you get your key contingent back. And look, there were some positives there as well, as that you were continuing to work in players that haven't been part of the rotation, you know, at the start of the season. It was a second straight game where Josh McRoberts played some considerable minutes. Derek Williams was once again the starter. You know, there were positives and negatives on both ends and for those players in particular, but you know, they've got a Spoelstra is trying to cast a pretty wide net, I think, and he's looking for contributions wherever they might come. So at this point in time, I think it's helping to be able to get that kind of experience. And again, if this team is healthy moving forward, it only helps, I think, to be able to get these players some experience in there and you know, and not let them fall too far onto the bench where they don't wind up playing at all. And then you can't count on them at some point during the season.
All right, let's move on to our spotlight players. Let's start with Josh Richardson.
Oh, I thought we were doing our power forward belt again.
Let's push that back. I want to get into the spotlight players first. We're going to mix it up a little bit. Maybe, you know,
let's do it.
We weren't getting enough sponsors when power forward belt was in that second slot. Let's push it back. Yeah. All right, spotlight with Josh Richardson. Probably his, I think, best all-around game since he's Well, most certainly his best all-around game since he's returned, right?
For sure, yeah. 19 points, 8 of 14 shooting, 1 of 3 from downtown, added 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. Yeah. So very active as far as his defensive tenacity was concerned. Had a key dunk there down the stretch and within the game's closing minutes as they were trying to kind of go basket to basket there, and it certainly worked. I guess it was – I don't know if it was necessarily the play that Spoelstra had called, because I think it was, it didn't seem like it worked out naturally, but Richardson was able to get the ball, get open, and drive immediately to the rim, and he didn't take much time off the clock. So that's the kind of, the play that we expect from Richardson, unfortunately before the injury limited him to start the season, but it looks like he's getting back in the swing of things, and he feels a little bit more comfortable, I think, both defensively and particularly offensively.
I thought that this was the best example of tonight's game was the best example of how the Heat want to use Josh Richardson. I thought that with Deion Waiters, when he was on the floor, or when Tyler Johnson was on the floor, they were basically the main ball handlers. I thought that they yes. were the ones bringing the ball up the most, but Josh Richardson was there as the secondary ball handler for a lot of the time, whether or not he was the second guy to get the ball in an offensive set, or whether or not he, would bring the ball up every once in a while. I thought that the way that they used him as a secondary ball handler was exactly what we should expect from Josh Richardson this season. I thought that was really good. I thought he took enough shots from all around the floor. He took 3 three-pointers. He had some runners and layups. He took a couple of nice mid-range step backs and jumpers and things like that. So to me, that was a really good all-around game. And his defense towards the end, like you already mentioned, was fantastic. I mean, Josh Richardson, we know he's a defensive stopper. That's what got him drafted. So to have him starting to get back, he played 38 minutes tonight, as many as any other player for the Heat. I mean, Whiteside played 38 minutes, but nobody else played more.
And he was the one who was on Korver for most of the game, right? So yeah. he was the one, the most active defender on Korver.
And I think it's safe to say, like, look, if he struggles, he struggles. But I think, I don't know if the injury is going to play much of a factor right now. As long as it's not something that he, re-injures or bothers again, I think mm-hmm. Richardson is safe to say. I think he's back. I don't think that's stretching.
No, I mean, you kind of want him to be a little bit more consistent, and I'm curious to see how he plays alongside Dragic once he does come back from injury, because I think, obviously we expect that to be the starting backcourt moving forward.
And with Winslow, yeah, I thought that brief time that they did play together since Richardson's been back, I think they really enjoy playing together, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that dynamic, that two-man game between Winslow and Richardson. I made a comment last night, either on the show or on Twitter, that it was one thing that this team was struggling, but it's another that they just haven't been that fun to watch, because they've just been so slow. Yeah. I think having Richardson and Winslow on the floor together eventually will help that, because they're, there's Rook 1 and Rook 2. They have a great bond, And to have those guys, as well as Tyler Johnson and Whiteside, involved together, I think that's going to make this team more fun to watch. You and I talked about the pace of this team, and with Whiteside, we might as well just move on to our spotlight with Whiteside now. You and I on the last podcast talked about how you can't really play as fast as you want if Hassan Whiteside is, the centerpiece of your offense. And I don't, sure. And I'm not saying that that's not true, but I also look at the Hawks and the pace with which they play with Dwight Howard. And I think that there's obviously some things there. You have a guy like Paul Millsap who can play center for you, when you take Dwight Howard out, and that certainly factors into your overall average. You have a fast player like Dennis Schroeder who likes to get to the rim quickly, and you have, catch and shoot like guys like Kyle Korver who can, just hit three-pointers even with a hand in his face, so you're not necessarily trying to get him. He could take a shot with 7 seconds or less without maybe being as wide open as maybe a lot of other players would want to be. But I'm starting to at least look at them and say, okay, if they could figure out how to play with a faster pace, maybe the Heat can figure out how to play with a faster pace with Whiteside. That said, I thought Whiteside really came along in this game. I wasn't impressed with him in the first half. He was missing a lot of easy shots at the rim. There's a couple of bunnies they just flat out missed that he didn't seem like he was jumping for or trying for. It was just embarrassing. And then really started to get going even before Dwight left, and then really got going, obviously, once Dwight was gone.
Yeah, I mean, good point there as far as the being able to match what Atlanta does. I think, you know, I saw Howard actually not necessarily initiate the fast break, but off of a rebound, he does start to push the ball up and bring it up court and things of that sort. That's just something that Whiteside doesn't do and obviously shouldn't do because he's not, I think, that good a ball handler. But he does need to understand how to play with that quicker pace there because I think it helps. But yeah, I think it's just partly that same problem that we've been pointing out over the last couple of games is that he just stays focused on doing one thing at a time and can't disengage from that. And that's a problem of his. You know, you never look to it. Well, I mean, I guess Howard has been difficult to appreciate throughout his career. But I mean, he's clearly a smarter player than Whiteside is, I think, and he's more capable of being flexible and being able to do multiple things at once, unlike Whiteside. So that's a cause for concern there.
Overall, Whiteside, 10 offensive rebounds, I thought really helped. Miami didn't shoot that well again, 40% from the floor. So anytime Whiteside can get those big offensive rebound numbers, that really helps the offense. I don't know, man. 25 rebounds is impressive and everything, but the Heat just misses a lot of shots, so I'm not that happy about it. You know what I mean? Like, he had a lot of opportunities to I mean, 10 offensive rebounds. That's a lot of opportunities to grab extra rebounds. 15 right. defensive rebounds is solid, don't get me wrong, but...
But it reminds me of you know, during the Big Three era when Miami was routinely one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. It's like, yeah, who cares? We were making all of our shots. You know, we had one of the highest field goal percentages in the league too. That's why there aren't many rebounding opportunities available when you're hitting over 50% of your shooting attempts. So I think that's a big part of it too. Yeah, I mean, obviously he's going to get big numbers like that, and I'm sure he's happy with that. Unfortunately, you know, I don't want to harp too much on Whiteside because I feel like that's something that both you and I have been doing a lot of lately. And I think that this was probably, like you pointed out, at one of his better games. But there are still problems, I think, with his approach. And you can't, as you pointed out early in the show, you know, he was a little bit distracted, I think, by having Howard there. And he can't afford to let, you know, bigger name centers like Howard and others distract him and keep him from doing what he does best, you know, and that seems to be the case. He has a habit of being taken out of his comfort zone, his strengths, and that's something that he needs to be much better at, because at this point in time, he's no longer the complimentary player that he was a year or two ago. You know, he is the star of this team. He is the guy who's going to be counted on to produce at a higher level, and at this point, we're just not seeing that kind of production to match the contract that he was awarded this past summer too. So we want to see some growth from him for sure.
It was interesting that, you know, you put him across Dwight Howard, who has been just roasted for his entire career for not developing a post game. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's got much more of a post game than Hassan Whiteside at this point, man. It's like,
oh yeah, he looks
Whiteside, like a large one in comparison. I feel like he's regressed. You know, like you're right. I don't want to keep laying things on top of Whiteside here, but. It's getting I texted you earlier in the game. I was just like, this guy has absolutely zero post moves, but it's not like he's trying either. Like, he tried, I think, on one spin move, and he ended up traveling, and that was it. Like, he was like, oh, I'm not even going to try. And he gets the ball, and he just kind of, like, catapults it towards the rim. And it's – there's
well,
like,
you said in Twitter, like, that he barfs it up towards the rim, and I thought that was pretty perfect because it does look like that. Like, he just loses all sorts of control and just upchucks it, you know, in the general direction of where the rim he might or might not be.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. And he just barfs it towards the rim and hopes for the best. And that's it, man. And even he had, like, this hook shot, and it's just, like, amazing. Like, his hook shot started off good last season, and that was, like, a real tool for this guy. And this season, it's super flat. It comes from his chest or his shoulder. Like, it's like his shot putting it.
That push shot of his, I mean, yeah. He works on that before the game. I've seen him twice now in pre-games, and he works on it before the game. Like, this is, it's like, at some point he said to himself, you know, I'm going to work on the ugliest possible shot and add it to my offensive repertoire, and I think it's going to work for me, and I'm just going to keep doing it regardless of whether it makes
it look
sense.
Like that. Like, I don't. It's not a
well,
good.
So
it's
tall.
So flat. It's not good, and you wonder why his field goal percentage just dropped. It's just like, what do you? They're running fewer pick and rolls with him, and that's something else I've noticed. Like, there's a lot fewer just lobs with him diving towards the rim, and it's a lot more of take the ball, do something, please bail us out here.
And that doesn't work as well, though. I mean, I think he was more effective when he was that rim runner there. And we wonder why they got away from that. I'm not sure if it's just because he doesn't have that chemistry yet that he had with Wade last season. I mean, there's a lot of different factors, possibly. Maybe he just hasn't developed it with Dragic yet.
That's exactly what it is. I don't think that he has that sort of chemistry with any of the guards right now. I think that Deion Waiters is new. Goran Dragic.
And Waiters certainly doesn't have that same kind of – he doesn't have that same kind of gravity that Wade did, where he could draw multiple defenders and kind of go away from the rim and still pull a defender towards him where they might leave Hassan and open in space as he dives towards the rim. That's
is there just somebody on this roster that – like Tyler Johnson maybe?
No. No, he's not going to get the respect from the refs or defenders at this point. I don't think so. Not as undersized as he is. I just don't see anybody on this team who matches that level of gravity. I mean, Wade is
the closest thing, right?
Yes, and unfortunately, again, he's not going to get the calls. I think most defenders, again, maybe because it's a race thing or whatever, they feel comfortable going one-on-one with Dragic and defending him that way. This is not a guy like Wade who historically has that kind of respect from defenders where he'll, you know, even as poor a jump shooter as he is, he'll draw more than one defender and, again, leave that kind of space open for Whiteside to dive to the rim.
So they need to make up for that with other ways, right, with a more spaced-out offense where, you know, yeah, Wade's not able to make as much space within a tighter window. Like, Wade is able to make more space within a tighter window, but you open up that window and do a little bit more spread pick and roll, and all of a sudden maybe you get him a little bit more space. He doesn't need that much room, right? Like, he's taller than everybody else, and he could jump higher than everybody else on most nights. You just got to get him the ball near the rim, and you just need somebody that knows how to throw an alley-oop, really. I think I'm oversimplifying things, I know, but it does seem that they've just gotten away completely from just the Hassan Whiteside as role man type thing, and they're... I don't want to be too hard on Whiteside because they're really just kind of bounce passing it into him and saying, right, all right, do something with it. And he's like, I don't really know, barf, and that's it. Like,
yeah, and he just seems to be positioning himself a little further away even when he does catch those opportunities.
That's what I noticed with Dwight Howard. When Dwight was in there, you know, other centers are able – they understand that, you know, the possession starts for a center before they get the ball, right? You're jousting for position under there, and I don't know that Whiteside I feel like Whiteside is more interested in calling for the ball immediately than getting position and then calling for the ball. And
good point.
And other centers are able to do that. And when Dwight Howard leaves and all of a sudden he's going against like Chris Humphries or whoever, then it's really not that hard to get position. And it's not a huge difference. It's really not anything he's doing. It's just all of a sudden he's not going up against Dwight Howard, who's, you know, equal of his size and weight and has got a forearm in his back. Now he's going against a much smaller Chris Humphries who can't compete with that kind of strength and athleticism. And he's got just a foot more, or even 2 feet more. And all of a sudden that makes the shot way easier for him.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I think I don't want to, again, not blaming everything on Whiteside, and it's hard because he had, you know, tied for the team high with 19 points along with Josh Richardson. It's something that you and I are both noticing here is they've got to put him in a better position to succeed, but Whiteside's also got to do himself some favors too and put himself in better positions to succeed as well.
Yeah, I think that sums it up nicely.
All right, power forward belt, let's do it.
yeah.
James Johnson, right?
what else can you say? Look,
it was one of the better games of the season. 13 points, 5 of 8 field goals, 3 of 5 from 3-point line. Our leading 3-point shooter tonight. That was weird.
Yeah. He continues to stand out, not just at the power forward position, but as one of Miami's better facilitators, shot creators, capable of doing multiple things, both offensively and defensively. He's really helped this team. You know, again, the results don't show it as far as the overall win-loss is concerned, but he is making a positive impact. Again, another night where Derek Williams started. He finished the night with just 18 points, had 3 of 8 shooting, 0 of 2 from downtown, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal, and finished with 6 points overall. So a better night for Derek, but not necessarily a good one. And I think, again, we saw James Johnson came in for Derek Williams early in the, I guess it was the late in the first quarter. No, maybe it might have been the start of the second quarter. But yeah, he played a significant amount of minutes, 26 minutes, so just 18 for Williams. Babbitt only played 6 minutes today, so he's clearly fallen out of the rotation. I don't think there's any injury there. And I guess, like I said before, Spoelstra's probably just trying to mix and match different players and see if he can come up with something positive. And certainly James Johnson has been, you know, our most consistent player this year. I mean, maybe that's not saying much because everybody else has been somewhat inconsistent, but he's been a pretty good, he's had a very good season for Miami so far.
I'd argue that maybe Tyler Johnson has been, but James Johnson's certainly up there. A plus nine tonight. I mean, I think the only other person that, yeah, the only other person that compared with that is, get this, Dion Waiters at a plus 10.
Nice.
Where are my Waiters haters at?
They don't care about plus minus.
You're right. The Warriors haters don't care about plus minus. I thought, I don't know if he's somebody that we want to put in the starting lineup, but I don't know. Proud owner of the power forward belt for now.
Yeah,
throwing anything after him.
That's a good point. You know, I was curious to see who was going to get the starting nod with Winslow sitting it out, and Spoelstra made the curious choice of going with Rodney Magruder, who finished the night with 37 points, 4 of 11 shooting for 8 points. 37 minutes, yeah, 37 points. I think he would have earned spotlight player if he had been able to do that. I think it'll take like 10 games to work at 37 points.
Yeah, anyway, 8 points on 4 of 11 shooting. Didn't make any of his three-pointers, but I thought he had an overall good, like, for a guy's first start who was not even thought to be a player on an NBA roster, right, you know, in training camp, you know, had a solid showing. I thought he was fine. You know, he had a big put back there at the end of the game that
he did.
Kept the Heat in it. That was huge. Yeah.
4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. I mean, that's doing the little things similar to what we expect as far as the overall stat line that we've seen from Winslow. So, you know, he held himself pretty well there, I think, and he was able to make some positive contributions there. I like the choice because I think something about James Johnson coming off the bench, I think he's able to thrive a little bit better in that regard. And we've seen over the last couple of games, now that McRoberts is back, that they seem to have something with the second unit where they're playing a little bit more evenly, a lot more energy across the whole rotation there. And I think it's worked that they've been able to claw their way back from those big leads that opponents have been able to build on them because of the strength of the second unit, including James Johnson and even McRoberts. You know, McRoberts didn't have a huge night. I mean, he was still able to make an impact in that he had 5 rebounds, 1 assist, but, you know, he pushed the ball up. He was able to do the things that we expected from him. Only had 9 minutes tonight, but anyway, yeah. As far as the power forward belt is concerned, clearly it resides with James Johnson. Looks to do so for quite a bit.
Good job, James. All right. Bloodsport, that's his nickname.
The Bloodsport title belt.
Yeah. Ooh. I love it. Bloodsport power forward belt. All right, some notes before we finish off here. Here's an interesting one. Dion Waiters and Hassan Whiteside have the same amount of blocks in the last 2 games. How's that?
I think that just shows Dion's incredible impact defensively. You know, he's a little underrated.
Really good, man. Defensively, he's really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, we talked about this. I mean, we knew that there was something that he was capable of doing. And, you know, as we talked to Jeff Garcia over at Locked On Spurs, you know, they knew all about what Waiters is capable of defensively because he showed that last season in the playoffs against them and was able to help eliminate a team that a lot of people thought might be a legitimate title contender.
You know, if only he can make Duncan, a freaking layup. Now,
that is a problem, right?
I am absolutely convinced that there were some blatant no calls. And I understand he probably annoyed the crap out of the refs with his constant and wanting, but
yes.
Holy crap, man. Like, there's a couple of them where it was just like, you've got to call that. And he is not getting the calls. And I don't know what it is, but he is just, he's not getting the calls, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was Ira Winderman who tweeted out.
0 free throws. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I think it was exactly that. 0 free throw attempts despite taking 30-something shot attempts over the last 2 games. I mean, clearly he had a big shooting night against the Spurs the night before. But, I mean, still, he's driving to the rim. You see him draw contact But he seems to have that same problem where he doesn't get knocked down a lot because he's just so sturdily built that he's able to absorb the contact.
Yeah.
And I think, again, the yelling of "and one" does not help his cause any, because it's just, I guess, it probably grates referees. I mean, I'm not sure if they could actually say that publicly, but I'm sure it plays a factor. It has to, man, because I can't see any other reason how he couldn't get a foul call every once in a while.
Willie Reed, only player with a DNP that wasn't injured.
That's right. Haslam played it a little bit, too.
Yeah, Haslam went in for a minute or two, and McRoberts was the first one off the bench. Seems to be at least what's going to be the pattern for now until or if Spolster decides to go away from that. Did McRoberts score tonight?
No, he didn't. He did not.
0 for 3, so he's 0 of 9. He's missed his last 9 shots. Hasn't scored. No big deal. Who cares? Scoring is for losers.
There was one particularly bad stretch, and I wanted to write it down, but out of frustration, I just said, screw it, I don't really care. It was just so bad. They were just like, they missed 2 wide open shots at the rim. I can't remember. It was a playoff between McRoberts and somebody else, and they missed these wide open shots, and they dribbled it away from the basket, and they wound up turning it over. I was just like, oh, man, that was just hideous. Like, he cannot hit a shot to save his life at this point. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what player you're talking about. And, you know, he seems almost like he knows it's strange. He knows exactly what to do with the ball if he's passing it.
Sure.
And he suddenly seems completely lost, like a deer in the headlights when he has to shoot it. And it's the weirdest thing.
Even at the rim, dramatic. Yeah. Shots that you'd think that he'd be able to hit with a greater percentage, and he's just not able to connect on those at all.
Maybe if he just pretends that the rim is like another player's hands. Like, there's got to, like, it's weird, there. Man. For a guy that passes so well, I've never seen somebody shoot that bad.
I think Spolster needs to call Steve Clifford and find out what the hell he did in his last year there with the Bobcats, because, I mean, apparently this was the one coach who was able to draw any kind of offensive, you know, strength out of McRoberts as far as his overall shooting is concerned. He had his best shooting season when he was there that last season with the Bobcats, and I think a lot of it had to do with Steve Clifford putting him in the best position to do so. So, I mean, I'm sure Spolster is smart enough and somebody on his coaching staff is smart enough to see what it is that he had done so well that last year there. But they need to go back and try and figure something out there, because it's just nothing else seems to be working, at least as far as his overall shooting is concerned.
All right, last thing that I got in my notes. Just wanted to give a shout-out to Tyler Johnson's defense on that last Hawks possession, that last real Hawks possession, where he got switched onto Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
It was like 21 seconds left.
Yeah. Forced him into a really bad shot attempt.
Yeah, and he didn't even get a chance to front him. He couldn't even get position because the Hawks ran a nice screen. So it's not like Tyler Johnson was able to get a great position on him. But he was able to bat the ball away on the pass to Millsap. Paul Millsap was able to recover it, but at that point Tyler Johnson was kind of able to muscle him away while he was trying to work to get the ball. You know what I mean? And forced him into like this long 2 fadeaway jumper, which is like a terrible shot.
Hit the side of the rim, didn't it?
What?
Didn't it hit the side of the backboard there? I think
amazing defense by Tyler Johnson. I was flabbergasted. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's got he's given up a foot to this guy and probably 100 pounds, and certainly that within like just a bench press, you know, just pure strength. But really, really good defense by Tyler Johnson. I just wanted to give him a shout out.
I think he had a big block against Bazemore on a drive to the rim. Did he not?
He did.
Yeah, like he kind of like he put both hands on it. It was very weird where he was like able to go up in the air and swat it with both hands, and that was I think that it actually turned into a fast break opportunity for Miami. So, yeah, he's certainly making his contribution defensively. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
All right, you got anything that you want to shout out, or do you think we covered it?
Well, no, I think my piece on Derek Williams is finally going to be published from Vice Sports, so be on the lookout for that, if you will. But nice. Other than that, looks like Miami should be having another opportunity for a victory on Thursday when they take on the Milwaukee Bucks. So that should be a good chance for Miami, hopefully, to pull out a victory and end this misbegone losing streak. And who knows, hopefully Goran Dragic will be back in the lineup at that point, so we'll see a little bit more consistency on the offensive end.
Yeah, they got a day to rest, and hopefully you're right. Like, they get these players back, see the starting lineup together. Yeah. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Go on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
With the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.